So let me first of all also thank the organizers for this workshop and also for giving me the opportunity to present my work. I'm going to talk about asymptotic safety of gravity matter systems and effective universality. The biggest part of the results are based on two papers, one already out on archive, and yeah, one I put July as outcome, hopefully. since I'm the first asymptotic safety quantum gravity speaker, I will take a bit of time in order to explain that. So yeah, we would like to quantize quantum gravity. Let's assume we start with the classical Einstein-Hilbert action. We would quickly realize, well, it's perturbatively non-renormalizable in four dimensions. This is usually argued with the negative mass dimension of the Newton's coupling. But if you could also just go ahead and do the loop computation, and then on two loop, you actually find that there's a counter term that you cannot reabsorb in the original action. This is the infamous two loop Gorosomnyoti counter term, which is the cube of the Weyl tensor. And this is usually considered as the onset of counter terms that cannot be reabsorbed the action. And then you need infinitely many new, infinitely many counter terms, and you spoil the predictivity of your theory. If you instead start with higher derivative gravity, you have the issues of ghosts, which was just also mentioned in the talk before. So yeah, you either have perturbatively non-unitarity, or you have perturbatively non-renormalizability. So we go ahead and ask what happens if you act on it with non-perturbative methods. And yeah, in this audience, I fortunately don't have to explain too much about what is asymptotic safety. So I can just go ahead and ask, is gravity non-perturbatively and asymptotically safe theory? This was actually proposed by Weinberg originally. And let's start with Einstein-Hilbert, and we compute the flow of the dimensionless Newton's coupling and the flow of the dimensionless cosmological constant by some non-perturbative means. Let's take the energy, the renormalization scale to infinity, and let's see if we encounter a non-trivial UE fixed point. This was done for the first time in four-dimensional quantum gravity by Martin Reuter, and this is one of the first phase diagrams in asymptotically safe quantum gravity. And here in this plot is again the dimensionless Newton's coupling and the dimensional cosmological constants. The RG trajectories point towards the IR, and indeed they found here a non-perturbative UV fixed point, which then renders the theory finite at high energy scales. And in the perturbative setup, we had an infinite amount of counter terms, and this spoiled the predictivity of the theory. And of course, we also have to address this question in an asymptotic safety, and the predictivity corresponds here then to the dimension of the UV critical hypersurface. So for each dimension of the surface, one has to do one measurement in order to fix the trajectory. And of course, this dimensionality of the critical hypersurface has to be determined. And this is of course still an open question, but I guess most of the people within the asymptotic safety community would say that it ranges from most likely between 2 to 4, including the cosmological constant, the Ricci scalar, and then possible higher derivative curvature invariants. In order to do this, one needs non-perturbative methods, in particular non-perturbative continuum methods. And here I would shortly introduce the method that is most commonly used in this community, which is the functional normalization group. With its non-perturbative RG equation set up by Christoph Wetterich. It is an exact one-loop equation that governs the flow of the scale-dependent effective action. This flow of the scale-dependent effective action is then given in terms of the scale-dependent fully dressed propagator of the theory and some regulator function. And this regulator function implements the Wilson RG scheme that we integrate out spectral values or momentum shells successively. And this regulator, in principle, suppresses all IR modes. And this is, for example, a sketch on how this works. So this is the theory space, the infinite dimensional theory space of all dimensionless couplings. And we start by some bare action, or in case of gravity, it's not a bare action. It's actually the UV fixed point that we're interested in. And then we integrate out the momentum shells or the spectral volumes successively. And in the end, we obtain at k equals zero the full quantum effective action. And then the different lines here correspond to different implementations of the regulator. And if we didn't do any truncation, then the regulator doesn't matter in the end, and we end up at the full quantum effective action. But of course, if we do truncations, then these will not end up at the same point.
G1, G2, G3,
It's just some dimensionless couplings.
It's not Einstein-like necessarily.
This is just a general sketch of the theory space with some dimensionless couplings, exactly, yeah. Importantly, of course, with this method, we can compute beta functions in a strongly coupled regime, but and also for field and momentum dependent functions. Yeah. So with this non-perturbative continuum methods, there was actually quite some development in the realm of asymptotic safety. So there have been done computations up to high orders, and on one end, high orders in the correlation function, so up to the graviton four-point function, for example, or to high orders in the derivative. So, for example, there's some work by Daniel where they included Ricci scalars up to the power of 34, but actually way much more, but that's not published yet. But also there are some the infamous Gorov-Zagnotti counterterm was investigated and found to be asymptotically safe with this in this computation.
Back in 2013, it was R to the 34, so now it must be much higher, right?
Yeah, it is much higher, I think.
Okay. Why 34?
That's what I ask my students as well. So my guess was it was a joke amongst them, maybe the house number of something, but in fact there is some structure underneath. There's an eightfold periodicity pattern for some, which had to do with convergence, and so they needed a multiple or a couple of periods to convince themselves that their results converge. That's why they had to go as high as that.
So as far as I understand this asymptotically safe scenario you're talking about is the one by Weinberg that proposed. If you add an infinite number of terms, the Einstein-Hilbert action, it might be that the flow of the couplings reach a finite dimensional surface.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So when you say that there is a plenty of evidence for asymptotic safety with some truncations, okay, so you're considering theories with a finite number of terms. So what do you mean with checking asymptotic safety? You mean that the flow of this finite number of couplings go to a finite dimensional surface which has lower dimensionality than the number of couplings at the beginning?
Yes, so of course. The most of the truncations we're looking at, they have a finite amount of couplings, yeah. And then of course the UV critical hypersurface is a priori finite dimensional. Yeah. But it's nevertheless a good hint that if we put in like 34 couplings and then there's only three of them, the dimensions. But there are also truncations that actually include a whole function f of r. So and that in principle include an infinite amount of couplings. But most
with the finite dimensional.
Yeah.
Okay. So you mean that with?
I mean both. In any case we found only a small number of relevant directions at the UV fixed point. Of course, most of the truncations have only a finite amount of couplings, so it's a trivial statement that the UV critical hypersurface
is. In that case, when you have a finite number of couplings, by checking the asymptotic safety conjecture, you mean that this coupling flow to a a surface with dimensionality lower than the total
number. Exactly, and if I now include higher operators, it also doesn't increase. So it seems to converge to a lower number. And as I said before, in many cases it's either 2, 3, or 4, depending on what you include and what you're actually looking at. Sorry. And now I'm actually at pure gravity. If you of course go to other gravity matter systems, it might become larger.
So yeah, sorry, that just was, I don't want to derail the talk, but when you say, what do you mean by evidence? Is it that all of these different calculations point to a finite dimensional critical surface?
Yeah, so all of these computations and also much more, which I didn't list here, of course, and all of these, we find a UV fixed point in all of these, the dimensional of the critical hypersurface is finite.
Okay, so that's what the evidence means.
Exactly, of course, there is no proof for this scenario, and because we only can work in truncations, but it seems so far that the truncation point towards the non-perturbative renormalizability. Yeah, okay, so as I said, there's much more evidence that I didn't put here. And actually, that's all I want to say about pure quantum gravity, because actually I want to go to asymptotic safety of gravity matter systems. And of course, there's a rather non-trivial interplay between gravity and matter. So on the one hand, gravity influences the matter system, and the matter influences the gravity system. And there's a lot of a priori questions that need to be asked. For example, what about the Landau poles in the standard model? Does gravity tame these Landau poles, or do they exist anyway? Do we get, by the UV fixed point in the gravity system, an enhanced predictivity? So can we actually, with the UV fixed point, make standard model pole stictions? What about the asymptotic freedom of the gauge coupling? Is it preserved under the influence of gravity? Or do they maybe instead develop a Landau pole? But also the other way around. So how does gravity influence the properties of the UV fixed point? Does it change maybe the dimensionality of the critical hypersurface, or does it even destroy the existence of the UV fixed point? That's the natural questions one has to ask in a gravity matter system. And let me start first with the matter influence on gravity. So first simple observation, why does matter influence gravity? I mean, I can now write, for example, down the running of the background's Newton's coupling, and of course the number of scalars, the number of fermions, and the number of vector bosons just directly appears in the flow equation, and consequently also in the naive assumption that it can influence the existence of the UV fixed point. Now you can go ahead and just ask this question and do the computation, and we did this, for example, here, just make an exemplary plot of the fixed point values with the number of fermions, and here in this example, it all looked fine, that you can include infinitely many number of fermions, but this is, of course, also just a truncation statement. So actually, we went further and actually, Daniel, me, and other people from Heidelberg actually looked at general matters, matter gravity matter systems, and we found that if the matter is actually only weakly self-coupled, and if we neglect high derivative curvature terms, then this cannot destroy the UV fixed point. But of course, this is also not what we want. In the end, we want to investigate it if with the matter self-couplings and with higher derivative gravity. And so this is actually still an open question, what happens if we include higher derivatives and if we include matter self-couplings. Maybe on the other side, what about the gravity influence on matter? So also here I can, first of all, only show you the evidence or first results that have been obtained so far. So for example, the Landau poles of the standard model couplings, the U1 coupling has been investigated in these papers. There's been some, maybe I show you first the plots. So this is the plot that also Francesco showed in his talk, the running of the standard model couplings. And here we have the Landau pole of the U1 coupling. And here's where gravity sets in. And
Can you go back? So this is including gravity or not?
No, this is not including gravity. So this is just the standard model running. And now I show you how it could look like if you include gravity. So this is a plot that I borrowed from Astrid and Aaron. Let's say this is actually what you would like to have in the end, a UV fixed point here, and of course the standard model here. Here we, in this case, one has an approximate standard model, so it's not precisely the standard model mass values, because of course you cannot wish for everything. You cannot wish for the UV fixed point, and then also wish for the infrared standard model values, but you have to determine what is your UV fixed point, and what is then the corresponding standard model that comes out in the end. So there's of course some parameters that you can fix, because you have a finite dimensional critical hypersurface, but there's also some that will be determined by the UV fixed point. So this is in the end what you would like to go for. Have a UV fixed point, determine what comes out in the standard model, and then see, do we need actually more degrees of freedom in order to produce the standard model as it is in the infrared. One of the impressive result of Astrid and Aaron was here that there are some UV, if the UV fixed point takes some specific values, then one actually gets an approximate standard model in the infrared. But what I want to go at is one needs actually a quantitative, reliable gravity computation in order to make statements. What I would like to present you now in the rest of the talk is what are the actual challenges in a non-perturbative gravity matter computation. So why is it actually hard to get quantitative control? Why is it hard to make solid results? And then I would like to tell you what is actually the hopes and hints that we have that we can actually get quantitative and solid results. So that's why I would like now to start with the challenges that we have in a non-perturbative quantum gravity computation. Okay, so first of all, in gauge theories in general, there's different avatars of a gauge coupling. So that's also in Young-Mills theory the case. So if we can obtain this running of the strong coupling from the three gluon vertex, from the four gluon vertex, from the ghost gluon vertex, together with the wave function renormalization of the respective fields. If the strong coupling is marginal, and so we have a two-loop universality. So the first two-loop coefficients, they are fixed. Also in gravity, we have, of course, marginal couplings. That is the R squared and the R mu squared coupling. And also here, we, of course, have a two-loop universality. The first two-loop coefficients of the beta functions are fixed. Now, we are interested in the Newton's coupling, the beta function of the Newton's coupling. This is not a marginal coupling, so we don't have any universality for these beta functions. Nevertheless, of course, there's if we now look at multiple multi-graviton couplings, so we look at the Newton coupling associated to a three-graviton vertex, to a four-graviton vertex, these are, on a classical level, they're identical. But now if we quantize, these are actually not identical anymore. They are related by Slavnov-Taylor identities. The quantization procedure in gravity instantly generates an infinite amount of avatars connected to one classical coupling. That's actually not the worst. There's also actually infinitely many couplings to start with. Let me go to the analogy of Young-Mills theory again. So as I just said, we have there are three couplings from which we can extract the running of the coupling. And in a perturbative regime, there's actually only one coupling, and this is because of the universality. And this is that's why in a perturbative regime they're actually lying directly on top of each other. But as soon as we go into the non-perturbative regime, they start deviating from each other. The Slavnov-Taylor identities between them become non-trivial, and they induce a separate running of these couplings. And actually, we see in the Young-Mills case, as soon as we're in non-perturbative regime, they deviate actually very, very strongly from each other. So in the non-perturbative regime, there's not a unique Young-Mills coupling anymore, and Slavnov-Taylor identity is actually highly non-trivial, and which makes computations in this non-perturbative regime highly challenging. And now, is it actually the same situation in quantum gravity? And if that's the case, then this would be a rather bad sign, because you have infinitely many avatars of the Newton's coupling that need to be computed separately, and it would be kind of challenging. And what I would like to show you is that in gravity, we're actually in kind of a different situation, luckily. This is maybe a bit of a complicated sketch of what I just told you. So what I would like to take away as a main message is here, there's different avatars of one classical coupling if you go to the non-perturbative regime. So in an imperturbative regime, you have one coupling associated to one operator. For example, the Newton's coupling we associate with the Ricci scalar. And then there's one coupling. But now we're in the non-perturbative regimes, and we have to take different avatars into account. We have fluctuation couplings that actually are responsible to drive the flow, and these are related by the Slavnov-Taylor identities that I just told you about that also exist, for example, in Young-Mills theory. Furthermore, we have to split the metric into a background and a fluctuation part, and this is related by the Niels identities, which further complicate the situation, but which I will just drop here for now because it's not relevant for the message that I want to get across. Instead, I would go back to actually my title, which was Effective Universality, and I would like to show you that actually the situation in gravity seems not that hopeless, because actually there seems to be an effective universality between these different avatars of the Newton's coupling that render them approximately equal in the end. So effective universality. What is effective universality? Effective universality is which we stumbled upon. So we look at the UE fixed point, and if the Slavnov-Taylor identities simplify in such a way that there's an approximate equality between the dynamical avatars of the Newton's coupling, then we have effective universality. It would provide that actually the computation become much more simple in this non-perturbative regime. We don't have to compute an infinite amount of avatars of the Newton's coupling anymore, because we can approximately equate them. This has been actually done in truncations before, and so it would provide a justification for that. And actually, it would also provide maybe a hint that gravity is not that deep in the non-perturbative regime. If we go further into the non-perturbative regime, the identities governing the relations between the couplings are becoming more non-trivial. And so if we actually find that, might be a hint that maybe quantum gravity is maybe just semi-non-perturbative. So we investigated this actually in an Einstein-Hilbert setting with minimally coupled matter fields. So here's again the gauge-fixed Einstein-Hilbert action. We added minimally coupled scalars, minimally coupled fermions, and also NV gauge groups to it, so that we have NV amount of vector bosons. And Then we looked at different avatars of the Newton's coupling. So for example, we have here the non-perturbative running of the free graviton vertex, which is given by these diagrammatics. We have the scalar graviton vertex, the non-perturbative running of that, which is given by these diagrammatics. Also the fermion graviton vertex or the gluon graviton vertex.
Sorry, when you say non-perturbative running, I mean you're looking at one loop diagrams, so I guess
yes.
What do you mean by non-perturbative?
I should say that these are fully dressed vertices, fully dressed propagators, and I left out the regulator insertion here, which is governing the successive integrating out. So so you could imagine you do one RG step, and then you dress this. This is also a fully dressed vertex, and then you reinsert this fully dressed vertex again on the other side. So in the end, via the flow, you're getting an infinite loop order.
And are the scalars fully dressed?
everything here is fully dressed, yeah.
Scalar, graviton, everything.
Everything is fully dressed, yeah.
But you must be making some approximations. So I guess you say it's non-perturbative, but so what is a truncation that you are?
So the FRJ equation is exact, but we are of course doing truncations. So of course it's hard to take the full dressing of all the vertices into account. We are also leaving. We are not computing the running of all the endpoint functions. So as you can see, the running of the three-point function is depending on a four-point function and a five-point function, and these have to be computed separately. And in this case, we only computed the running of the three-point vertices, for example. Also, the running of the higher curvature invariants we neglected here. So yeah.
So you're saying the other ones, you assume they don't run the other vertices, or?
So we assume actually that the dressing of the three-point function is connected by, let's say, simple water identities to the running of to the dressing of the four-point function. So these are the different other tasks of Newton's coupling that we're looking at, and as I said, these would be the same on a classical level, but now on a quantum level, these are actually related by non-trivial identities. And as you also can see from the diagrammatic level, they don't seem to have anything in common on the first view. So now you can go ahead and just compute the fixed point values, for example, as a function of the number of scalars. And already here you can see that the both couplings actually at the UV fixed point behaving rather similar. So they're both rising with the number of scalar flavors, and actually also the difference remains approximately always the same. So within the whole range, they have a maximum out of 20% difference. And first, we didn't pay much attention, but then we actually asked, is it actually coincidence, or is it a generic feature that they are behaving rather similar, or is it a non-trivial thing? And so we went ahead and actually we first of all devised a measure for the difference between the two couplings, or a measure for effective universality. And we defined this measure epsilon, which parameterizes how big is the difference between the different avatars of the Newton's coupling. If epsilon is zero, then we have this effective universality that the two avatars of the Newton couplings are the same. And it further has some other properties that I don't want to spend too much details on it. I will just show you the result for the graviton three-point function and the graviton scalar Newton's coupling. You can see here that there's some parameter space of quantum gravity, two couplings that are actually related to the cosmological constant. You can see in green, you can see with the white lines where epsilon is zero, where we have effective universality. The green areas mark actually where a UV fixed point would be allowed, and red regions where there would be no UV fixed point. And you can see with the white dot where the actual UV fixed point lies that I presented you just two slides ago. And as you can see, this UV fixed point lies very non-trivially at this white line epsilon equals zero. So we saw here that these two couplings are behaving similar over a wide range of scalar flavors, and this is not a generic case. This is actually only non-trivially realized at the UV fixed point. And now we went further ahead and asked, is this now actually a coincidence between these two versions of the coupling, or what happens if we include more avatars of the Newton's coupling? And actually here, the same thing happens. Now we included all gravity matter, avatars of Newton couplings, and also the free graviton-Newton's coupling. And also here we found actually that the UV fix point that we see lies fully in this region of effective universality. This is now actually, compared to this plot, this is now zoomed a lot in. That's why this area actually seems rather big, but this is actually a really small area in the parameter space of quantum gravity. And this is actually, in some sense, a highly non-trivial result, because we have really different versions of Newton's couplings that have, on a diagrammatic level, nothing in common. They should be related by non-trivial Slavnov-Taylor identities, but then at the UV fix point, these identities seem to simplify in such a way that all of these couplings in the end become approximately equal again. So the main message here, all avatars of the dynamical Newton's coupling seem to feature an effective universality.
How sharply are those lines known? I mean, is there, like, that star is right at the boundary of the two regions?
Yeah, I mean, we can only work in approximations. So this UV fix point is actually obtained in a bi-local approximation to the flow. And so are these lines. So, let me phrase it another way. So we want to associate the Newton's coupling, of course, with a projection onto the Ricci scalar. And if we have a non-perturbative flow, this is actually not an easy task to project exactly on the structure of the Ricci scalar. So there is some uncertainty here due to this. In the uncertainty uncertainty in the position of the fixed point, and of course also uncertainty where the lines are. But actually, I think if we've resolved that better, if we find better ways in order to project on the Ricci scalar, to project on the coupling that we want to associate with the Ricci scalar, then actually I think this is actually getting better. And yeah. Let me summarize. I wanted to show you that gravity and matter have a non-trivial interplay, and we want to find out what happens if we couple the full standard model to quantum gravity, and what happens if we run then to an infrared. Do we need what new matter degrees of freedom do we need in order to exactly arrive at the infrared values of the standard model? In order to do that, we actually need control over the approximations we are doing in a non-perturbative computation. And then I want to tell you, well, it's actually hard to do non-perturbative computations because you instantly get infinitely many versions of one classical coupling that you all need to have under control. But I hope I could convince you that actually at the UV fix point, there seems to be a non-trivial remnant of diffeomorphism invariance that we have broken by our regularization and by our gauge fixing. But it is still present at the UV fix point. And this is what we call effective universality, that despite the breaking of diffeomorphisms, that the Newton's coupling seem to be still in rather good agreement. And yeah, this might hopefully provide a guiding principle for future truncations. And yeah, last but not least, also an indication for the physical nature of the UV fix point, because we have now computed 4 beta functions of the Newton's coupling. And the UV fix point could be a random zero of these beta functions. And of why should this random zero possess something like a remnant diffeomorphism invariance? But it does, and so in some senses, hopefully provides a good hint for the physical nature. Thank you for the attention.
All right, so do you have any more questions? We have a few.
So I wanted to ask you, when you use vector x equation, like this, you have this effective action, k gamma. So is there any reason why you can take a local action for this gamma, a local expression for this gamma? So in principle, I expect also on local terms, because this is not the classical action, right? It's obtained by doing some path integral.
Yeah, in principle, you can, of course, also generate non-local terms, or you can put in the beginning non-local terms, yeah.
Can I quickly comment on that, maybe?
Yeah.
So if you span your theory space with truly non-local couplings, then you will have a theory space that has an infinite number of canonically relevant directions.
No,
the non-locality that you expect to generate comes from a resummation of quasi-local terms. So there is work, for instance, by Alessandro Cordello showing that the Polyakov action, the R, 1 over box R, so a non-local action, you generate that from this quasi-local theory space as you flow down all the way towards the infinite by a resummation. So you work with a quasi-local theory space, but that doesn't mean that you don't recover the usual non-localities of the effective action in the deep infrared. But you don't expect to put in any non-localities in the UV. The UV action you expect to be local. So this is why the theory space stays quasi-local.
Ah, okay, because you mean that when you go to very high energies, since any non-locality is associated to a scale, a length scale, and you don't see essentially this length scale at very high energies. So something like this. High energies, any non-locality.
In standard local quantum field theories, we're saying the UV is local, right? But of course, we expect non-localities in the infrared. Mm-hmm. And so here we are saying, well, this is exactly that type of setup where you expect the UV to be local as usual. So of course, you could also then say, well, let's try something, you know, non-localities in the UV. But I would say that that's probably a dangerous thing to do.
So there might be some non-locality in the UV, or you should
not in the standard setup. And I think if you want to make the UV action non-local, then you will have a problem with an infinite number of canonically relevant couplings. So it will be very difficult to get a finite dimensional critical hypersurface.
Well, it's not that I wanted to make it non-local. Is that so? Generally, it is non-local, right?
The effective action in the infrared, not in the UV. Yes.
Okay. So you mean that those non-local terms that are generated quantum mechanically mm-hmm. are negligible in the UV?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, to some extent, this is still a matter of choice, but the only understood quantum field theory which have a well-defined UV behavior are local ones. Okay, so there are very good arguments to suggest that if there is a meaningful UV limit for whatever quantum field theory,
I'm not thinking about extending the field theory.
Should be local.
No, but not
operators.
Saying that the classical action should
but
be.
But nevertheless, local. You could still, if you wanted, be even more liberal than that and try to define some quantum field theory which, even in the UV, has non-local terms. Okay, if you
but
typically.
In general, these non-locality are not generated. She said, "Do you agree with that?"
Oh, totally. This is very well known that these conventional type of non-localities, which we know from infrared effective actions, be them gravitational ones or others, okay, they are ordinarily generated out of actions which in the UV are local actions.
Yeah.
The point I wanted to make, though, is that since as long as we do not have fully agreed quantum version of gravity, yes, you might still think and be liberal in your thinking about gravity that maybe some non-local operators may play some role there, okay? Yes. Although many people would agree to what Astrid just said, that this tends to generate many more relevant operators, okay, so people wouldn't quite know to what that is leading, yes?
No, I mean, I'm trying to understand. I mean, this is a general question, it's not specific. So, assuming you don't know there is a fixed point, and, you know, generally, if I have a theory, might not have a fixed point. I mean, which is even with the finite. The question is, do you do the truncations? I mean, how do you? What I'd like to understand is that to which extent I can you know, it is that I search for the theories that a computational gradient that have a fixed point, or actually can prove that there is a fixed point independently of the way actually I'm doing the analysis. An example, if I take the Python Lagrange, it's a simple thing, and I don't know there's a QCD at low energy, sorry, at high energy. And I apply the approach. I remember that Roberto Percacci, he found those fixed points in the Python Lagrange. And that is a possibility. There are certain possible Python Lagrange or certain arbitrary terms that they're ubiquitous in their own right. That doesn't mean that it is the actual ubiquitous of your Python Lagrange. So there is still a possibility that you find a fixed point by the, you know, say by searching a certain subset of theories, because that's what you do when you truncate the technique. But then the full theory doesn't have it. But there is,
that's totally clear.
Okay, fine.
Absolutely, you can have very many UV completions for one and the same infrared physics.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, we do know that from many cases, and maybe QCD. In some other parallel universe, QCD doesn't exist.
Exactly.
That's a nonlinear sigma model. You know, it's not the
so
circle.
All I'm saying is
that,
I guess that it's not a critics, but one possible thing is you are searching for the tiers that do have a UV completion this time.
So that is.
I think you can be sharper.
Okay.
So I think the sharp thing to say here is input. The input is a prejudice about what are the dynamical degrees of freedom.
All right.
Okay? And so the prejudice which people tend to work with is to say, we like to work with metric field as the main carrier of the gravitational force. Okay?
Like, I mean,
this is a prejudice in as much as if you would say, like,
string theory. I love string theory.
If I have a low energy nonlinear sigma model and I want these degrees of freedom to be fundamental,
fine,
then let me try to quantize that theory non-perturbatively.
It's not a clear prejudice that often people kind of get a little bit
sensitive. But then the analogy with QCD is this.
Yeah.
So in the nonlinear sigma model, suddenly new degrees of freedom pop up.
Absolutely.
And of course they are a game changer because they're completely new. They then have
efficiency.
Yes. Okay. So maybe there are other new degrees of freedom underneath the metric field. Well, then the universe will look different.
Exactly.
So I don't think for this you need to be sort of fundamentalistic in the sense of saying, well, this is the fundamental description of gravity. So even if, you know, fundamentally at some scale gravity is something completely different, if there is this UV fixed point, I mean, that's a universal feature. And from very many theories, you will actually, you know, flow very close to the fixed point, and in the infrared, it will essentially look like asymptotic safety, even if asymptotic safety isn't totally fundamental.
So
in some sense, we are exploring universal properties of gravity under the assumption that's beyond the Planck scale, you can still use the metric, but you don't need to make the assumption that holds to arbitrary high scales. And so in some sense, it's a probe of a much broader class.
All I'm saying is that once you marry and you stick your study with string theory, which has one in principle, you be completion, right? I mean, so
this isn't necessarily incompatible. So if the string scale is much higher than the Planck scale,
you have already married to one particular paradigm, and you try to see whether there are theories that gives you that particular fixed point. That's what I'm saying. It's nothing particularly different.
I think the comparison with string theory is misleading because string theory has very many new degrees of freedom. So to some extent, this set of ideas is the exact opposite.
Yeah, no, but I'm
they actually are not introducing any new degree.
Oh, fine. But all I'm saying is like in the Planck,
yeah.
I design the lines and I get the fixed point there, but I could also have QCD.
So maybe then the way we and that will offer interesting doors. So for example, if you manage to come back with a negative
as long as you keep deep, it's fine.
We have a coffee break. So I'm going to say a time, and you're going to ignore me, but the time is 20 past 11. Are you sorry for that?
Yeah.
And then you'll come a few minutes after that.